Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
New York, they don't need Flash. No Giant fan has ever asked for Flash. David Tyree is a legend. He made one play his entire career. That's the point. Eli Manning, it comes across as a goofball. Phil Simms was never a likable quarterback, right? He's not in the mold of a Joe Montana type. New York is a blue-collar football town through and through. They want to play good defense, and they want to run the ball. That's it. They don't want prima donnas. They don't want nonsense. Now, Beckham's exciting, and they all get behind him, but you allocate that much money there. I'd rather do what the Niners are doing. Spend a little bit here on Garcon. Spend a little bit here on Goodwin. Pay the quarterback. I'll spend some money on Jerick McKinnon and allocate the resources across the board, and we'll continue to keep the cap manageable. This Beckham deal... this is going to hamstring them.
And that's what I like, because like you talked about, you got Gronkowski and Edelman. They require you to use more than one guy. Sometimes you got to double Gronkowski. So now you got three guys on two. The number game. It's a number game. Khalil Mack, you have to put three guys, a tight end, a tackle, and sometime a running back. It's a numbers game. So when you have a guy or guys that can draw more than just the one on ones, you're winning.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1A radio.com station. This is exactly why RPOs are so popular now. In the past, it was 11 defenders accounting for 10 offensive players. You didn't need to account for the quarterback because he wasn't going to run on you. Now, most people will go, well, what about Michael Vick? Michael Vick is the exception. He's not the rule. Most guys are going to hang in the pocket, and they'll break contain if you give them an opportunity. So you can play 11 on 10, like you said, a numbers game. The problem with the RPO is it now brings the quarterback run into play. He's making a read on the defensive end. He's either going to give it to the back if the defensive end holds, or if the defensive end crashes, he's going to take it and boot. Now you flip the equation back to the offense. It's 11 on 11, and if they go ahead and dedicate that defender who they're reading as someone they're not even going to block, they're just going to account for him on the read. Now, all of a sudden, it's 11 on 10 offense. Just by pure math and by scheme, you're able to give yourself an advantage in these situations.
Isn't that what did Kaepernick in, though? When teams decided we're going to hit the quarterback, remember in the beginning, they said, we don't know if we can. Is he a runner or is he not a runner? Because we couldn't hit number 7. And he ran around like a gazelle. He changed the position until defenses said, we're going to hit him. And then the more they hit him, the more banged up he got. The more banged up he got. He still was elite,
yeah,
but he was slower.
I think what held him back was when he wasn't running and he had to stand there and dissect and look.
He couldn't do that.
Telegraphing passes, yeah. Staring down receivers, yeah. And unable to get off his primary read.
That's
so,
fair.
And I think the same would hold today if he came back. He would still be a great runner, and the RPO would fit him perfectly. But
he can't play. Defenses catch up.
You went all the way around on that pretty fast, Jim.
You
did a complete 180.
Jim with the full analysis there in about 40 seconds.
Jim, you mean to say now? You mean to say now?
Coach, he can play. Stop.
Now? You're saying now.
Stop that he can't play.
Wait.
What the hell are you guys talking about?
You guys.
Whoa. You guys say the guy can't play.
He doesn't want to be lumped in with Coase.
Don't try to make this racial in your childish ways.
You guys.
I'm going to side with Lowe here. I wasn't being lumped in.
I'm not even making this a racial.
I tried to hedge you off of the pass.
I'm just trying to, dude. You say the guy can't play. He's better than Tannehill. Better than Tannehill. He can start and he can start.
I'm hearing good things about Tannehill down there.
Yeah,
in camp.
He's a hung tooth. Bortles is, come on, guy. Boy, what is Bortles?
Bortles was in the AFC Championship game last year. What are you talking about?
I mean, there's places this guy could be starting. Is he elite quarterback? No. Is he better than 40% of the quarterbacks out there? Without a doubt.
So he can stand in the pocket and you'd be fine with him throwing the football?
There's a lot of guys that aren't good. Is he better than anybody on the Raiders?
We all agree with that.
Osweiler.
Thank you.
Osweiler's
one. He's still in the league. I mean, is he better than any Raider backup right now in their squad? Without a doubt, Collins better than
any. You think so?
Oh, have you seen those guys play?
That's the word that's out there right now, is whether or not the Raiders should make a play on Colin Kaepernick to upgrade the backup quarterback position. That is a conversation that's out there. We're not the ones starting it. Other people have written about it. They said, EJ Manuel and Connor Cook look terrible.
Horrible.
They look absolutely terrible going against backups. Now, they're playing with backups by and large, but they're going against backups. Does anyone feel confident that if Derek Carr misses five games this season, the Raiders can go 3-2?
No.
Can the Raiders go 2-3 if everyone else steps up and plays extraordinarily well in the absence?
No.
Well, maybe.
No.
Okay, fine.
Thank you.
Fine.
You had me at 1-4.
But you'd feel that way. You need a guy that can I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you need a guy who can manage
absolutely
the ship at that position. Now, there aren't many of them out there.
They're not.
That's where it becomes very.
And you're confident that Kaepernick can do that now?
Well, you're directing that at.
Okay, you're confident he can do that now?
Yes.
Because I was the guy who was saying I wanted him to come back and revolutionize the quarterback position. I think the way defenses have changed, he's exposed himself. Like Dib said, he can't stand in the pocket. He can't make reads. And since he can't use his legs as much anymore, he's not the same guy. There was a time when he and Russell Wilson changed the position. I loved it.
Russell
but
still
can do it.
Russell
now
can do
it. Right,
Russell
right,
still can.
But right
here, when you get a chance,
yes,
let's go back and whenever you want to sit down,
okay,
let's watch some game tape.
Oh, and no, I'll film study.
No, for Coase.
Because, I'm all for
no, because
that.
Then I want to point it out. And I want to say, okay,
can I pick the game?
You can pick
the game at Arizona where he threw two touchdown passes to the Cardinals cornerback.
How about the game in Chicago where he threw for nine passing yards?
All right, there are also good games out there.
Right,
the Packers,
but they can.
Right,
listen, these guys
no one would hit him.
But
don't interrupt him.
You guys can do that. That's great. But I can do that for Tom Brady. What? You guys
Kansas
say
City Monday night.
What? I can't do it against Tom Brady?
Remember when Belichick was asked whether or not they were done with Brady?
Exactly.
Jim, go ahead and interrupt him now.
Exactly. No, I'm not going to.
I can do it for Alex Smith. I can do it for every quarterback.
You can do it for every quarterback.
So don't give me the sample size and then say, okay, I'm going to give you a game. We can do that for any quarterback in the league. So don't give me the numbers game. I get that.
Let's not make this a referendum on number seven's entire career. Okay,
I'm
Kaepernick,
just,
there was a time when I couldn't wait to watch him.
I'm just going to go ahead and ask you this. What's in that little purple box that should hold a retainer?
It does look like a retainer.
Instead is holding, what do you have in there?
Mixed nuts.
Why do you have it in a retainer case?
Unsalted mixed nuts. It's the right size.
Because he doesn't believe in using Ziploc bags because they're harmful to the environment. So he.
If that's true, then that's fine.
It's because
it
his wife doesn't believe in Ziploc bags. He has no he has no purchase when it comes to what container his snacks are in.
Lo, I got to say, I'm shifting to Coase's side here. He's so diligent with his nuts. how can you not support him?
He said his nuts were in his
What you said there? You took it out of the sack?
He has his nuts in a purple box.
Oh, man.
Do I ever. I think we
all
agree.
Feels like we're getting away from it a little bit.
We all agree there was a point when Colin Kaepernick was just a joy to watch. I don't know if that time is now. That's all I'm saying. I understood. I mean, it's because of the way the game is being played. And you're talking about run-pass options. How long before defenses decide, I'm going to hit you? And how long are they going to continue with run-pass options?
Well, that's where it becomes so fascinating, because in Doug Peterson's new book, Head Coach of the Eagles, he talks about how many people mocked the offense they were doing. Gruden's one of the guys who talked about it as gimmicky and, you know, it can only go so far. And he looks around and so many people have latched onto this part of the book because they've said, what does it matter if it works? What does it matter? What does it matter how you define it, how you criticize it, how you knock it down? This is the problem with some of the old school mentality in football. We don't want to embrace analytics. We watch tape. Great. Watch tape. Also use some of the analytics to support. Why are you so opposed to additional data? It's like saying, I'm not, you know what, this guy, this quote, cardiologist, I'm not interested in his metrics. I'll just go ahead and keep eating what I'm eating and I'm going to be fine. No, people go to doctors now. People go to advanced specialists because the data exists. Yet in sports, we're so opposed to it. So many people laughed at that system, yet it ate up New England and everybody else. And they were able to do it with a backup quarterback.
And what did Shanahan do? Think about Kyle Shanahan, what he did against so many teams with Robert Griffin. Everyone said Robert Griffin III should have been MVP.
Old Bob Griffin.
Old Griff. But what did Kyle Shanahan do? He understood the player that he had, and old Cal said, I'm going to put the offense for him. It was the read. If you have a good running back, you read him into the line. And when you read him into the line, if you're playing Mike linebacker, what do you got to do? If I put that ball in that running back's hand and he can run,
You have to. It's impossible. You got to step up. And if you step up and my tight end blocks down and now he, boom, he gets into the middle of the field. Now I got a read option. Tight end's right there. Bam. Safeties comes down. Once the safety says, okay, we know what they're doing. They're taking that away. Now you have your out receiver throw out. So you simplify the offense for guys. And that's what Colin Kaepernick was able to flourish in certain off. Now, can he go out and do certain offense and be a pocket quarterback in a lot of other offensive system? No, but if you put the things around him with the right coach, the guy is very capable of winning ball games. But that's how you did do it.
That's a good hour right there. Everybody pat yourself on the back. Give yourself a modest round of applause. Strong hour. Greg Papa will join the clown show next here on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowandibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back to 95.7 The Game. Low Neil, Dan Dibley, and Jim Cosmore here with you, giving you the good sounds of you-know-who, none other than Mr. Coz. Are you done eating now, Coz?
Just about.
Okay, go ahead.
Just about done. Thank you very much for doing that. Joe Fortenbaugh did about a four-hour show in 2 hours and 15 minutes. He said, that's it. I can't do anymore. I'm getting out of here. Said, okay. So I'm going to slide into his chair.
There we go.
Just for the rest of the remainder of the show. And then we will cruise it along with you all the way up until 10 o'clock this morning. So good morning to you. Thanks so much for listening to 95.7 The Game. You know what, Anna, you want to get your, I know you got something coming up here at 95.7 The Game, right, that you want to do and you wanted to mention. What do you got for us?
So Team 95.7 The Game, I'm part of that. We are doing the San Francisco First Responder Stair Climb here on September
8th. Are you the most important member of this team?
Of course.
Okay, that's what I want to know.
Of course. But we're going to be climbing a 52-story building, 1,197 stairs, and it's all for a great cause, all to help first responders.
Great
They're
job.
The ones who first help all of us. They're the first into the buildings when everybody else is leaving. It's all to support them. And I want to thank some donors as well. John Gumas just recently donated. Thank you to him. And if you'd like to donate for this great cause, you can go to 95.7 The Game's website. Also, I have pinned on the top of my Twitter account the link, so you can go straight there and donate. Great cause again. Those first responders are amazing, and this is close to September 11th, just in remembrance of
awesome.
What they've done for all of us.
Outstanding. Great job by you and the entire team at 95.7 The Game, and thank you for supporting such a great cause and all the men and women who are first responders who do great, great work. We should always be patting them on the back and giving them an attaboy and an attagirl. All right, let's move it along here at 95.7 The Game. Low and Dibs are here. We were talking a lot about the National Football League and spending money on certain guys, but what it comes down to is winning football games. And if you're looking at a season schedule, year number two for the John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan regime, first and foremost, Lo, what are expectations? Last year, you stunk on ice until number 10 came on board. And then you started to beat some teams, and you can argue that you beat teams when it didn't matter. You beat Jacksonville when it mattered to Jacksonville. So maybe you got out over your skis a little bit, or maybe it's the real team you think you are. But that finish to the year last year, what does it do to expectations this year?
I think it set the bar high. I think Niner fans are looking at Jimmy G winning five games, beating three playoff teams, even though the Rams didn't necessarily play their starters.
No.
You beat the Tennessee Titans when a lot was on the line.
True.
Tennessee was playing hard as they could to try to win. They also wanted a win for Delanie Walker, a guy who was a former Niner who had a big game. So you beat that team. You beat Jacksonville. Jacksonville did a lot of talking. They were talking about, hey, this guy, we're going to get to him. And you still lost to Jacksonville. They exploited Jacksonville's secondary and really, really looked really well. And then the Rams. So when you look at what happened, what did that do? Was it fool's gold? No. It showed that you have a quarterback, so now you're capable. He makes everyone around him better. So I get that. But still, the reality of this thing is you got an offensive tackle that's going to be a rookie in this league and getting ready to go to a team that's going to be very, very hostile in a very, very hostile environment, talking about when they play Minnesota. You have an offensive guard that missed the whole last year, Joshua Garnett, and you think, and hopefully this guy can play, and hopefully you'll see if this guy's worth what you paid this guy for coming out as a rookie, first-round pick. Solomon Thomas on the offensive line. Ormstead has not been healthy. It was a first-round pick that people are saying, is this guy a bust? So you still have a lot of question marks on this team. Even though you won those last five, six games of the year, I think there's a lot of question marks. I think your schedule is tough. I think reasonable expectations for this team, in my opinion, is 7 to 8 wins. And if you get lucky and win two more, it can happen, yeah. But to me, do I think it's going to happen? No. But I think that they are building in the right direction, and they're doing it the right way.
And, Dibs, if you look at a 6-win team from last year, 6-10, first of all, were they 6-10 worthy?
Yeah, I think they're about 6-10.
You thought that was
a
roster that was 6-10?
No, it's not about the roster. It's about the performance. And if you look at their first seven games, I think they had five games settled by one score or less. So those are games that can go either way. The historical analysis of the NFL would indicate that those games eventually kind of even themselves out over time. And they lost more games early, close games, than they probably normally should have. Then again, Jimmy G was able to steal a couple games back for them. So I think they were about a 6-10 outfit when you look at them in totality.
Greg Papa is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll get into some of this with him. If you look at last year and then start to project into this year, Lowe's at the 7-8 win category. I'm at the same place. I'm a 7-8 win guy. And if that happens, I think they ought to be ecstatic. I think that's a great leap up for what the organization is doing. I talked to some guys around here. They're like, it's a 10-win team. There's a 10-win season on the way. Where are you as far as a gauge? Because I was looking at the schedule. It's not exactly an easy schedule issue.
No, it does get a little easier in the second half.
Yes.
And if you look at the Vegas win total, it's at 8.5 right now. If you want to go over, you actually get plus money, plus 140, which would mean you bet 100 and you get 140 back. So that's slightly less expected that they would go over 8.5 than it is that they'd go under 8.5, which is minus 170. Heavily favored. So most people are saying the Vegas odds are indicating that under 8.5 or 8 wins is more likely. I looked at their schedule and I see the potentiality for them to go 9-7, but really it comes down to something that we were kicking around on the email thread last night about Arizona. It's the Arizona Cardinals to me. If you can beat Arizona twice, now you have the chance to be a 9 or a 10 win team. But if Arizona proves to be better than everyone's expecting, and that includes the Vegas win total, which has Arizona at 5.5 as their expectation. If Arizona is better than people think and they end up doing better against San Francisco, then all of a sudden you're looking at 7 or 8 wins, in my opinion.
So it doesn't surprise. And I'm kind of, I mean, it's not flip flopping, but just like it wouldn't surprise Dibs if they win 9. He's thinking, okay, that 8-7. But if you win, beat Arizona. If you win a game here, 9 can happen. But I'm just saying where I'm at right now, it's a 7 or 8 win team. Yeah, you might get lucky and win a game, but on the flip side, you might be not so lucky and lose a game. Arizona, to me, guys, people aren't talking about that defense. They still got, you know what their pass rusher got last year? 17 sacks. I mean, you think about what they have in Chandler Jones. You talk about Peterson, their lockdown corner. Arizona's defense is not going to be shabby. And by the way, I think they have a top 3 rusher in the National Football League. Talking about number 31, they got a guy that can run the ball too. So when you look at Johnson and think about where they're at as a team, yeah, the quarterback position is the question mark, but you got a Fitzgerald, you know, receiver that's been a Hall of Fame type of receiver. I think this Arizona team, I think 5, that number, I think that they're more, I would say it's more safe to say that I would be more willing to bet that team over 5 than San Francisco over 8.
Right now, best team hands down Rams in the division.
I agree.
Fair enough?
Yes.
Who's the hands down second best team in the West? Who right now in the NFC West, if you can say hands down, is there one?
No, you can't go hands down. Hand down, man down. Mama, there goes that man. If you look at the Vegas win total expectancy numbers, you see Seattle at 8 and the Niners at 8.5. So to me, there's no hand down second choice. I think for me, until you knock Seattle off, you got to make Seattle the second choice because San Francisco has not shown an ability to go north and beat the Seahawks. And Seattle's come down here and won, I believe, 5 in a row at Levi Stadium. So to me, you can't put the Niners above Seattle until you prove you can beat them.
Is the quarterback the difference, the difference maker, the game changer in the division? Can quarterback play be it? If it is, who's the best quarterback in the West?
I think it's Russell Wilson. You still have to give him, the nod. And you look at what he did last year, especially in the second half of the season when he was running around for his life, making plays late in ball games, and you still have to give him enough respect. Put some respect on his name.
I'll put respect on that name.
I think secondly, I would go Jimmy Garoppolo.
Would you?
Yeah, I would give him the slight edge over my guy Jared Goff, who I motivated to have a good season last year, famously.
Marin Catholic, great.
Yes, Marin Catholic. Shout out the Wildcats right there, Francis Drake Boulevard in Kentfield. Hard pass Green Bray. Once you get through Green Bray, you're almost there. Stop before you get to Ross, of course, but I digest. And then I would put the Arizona quarterback situation fourth, although I think the Rosen one will turn out to be a good quarterback.
You like him.
I do like him, but I don't know if he's ready to step up into that echelon yet.
How about quarterback play for you in the West?
Oh, we're in the same church, same crew, me and Dan on this one. I think when you look at Russell Wilson, what he's brought to the table, you've seen that guy just will games take over by himself. Still, he's able to be electrifying. He's so slippery. He's hard to tackle. The guy's Houdini in the pocket. Don't see him take a lot of sacks. So you would have to give Russell Wilson. And then I think you're right. I think Jimmy G, what you see what he's able to do. He's big. He's physical. The guy can throw the ball. He brings a lot to the table. So I think that Jimmy G would be too. And then, yeah, then you would go, you know, Jared Goff down there in Los Angeles. So what you think about who's, when you lay it out like that, I think too, you look at Seattle when you're talking about who is the second best team in the division, I think you would have to give the edge to Seattle. Seattle still, in my opinion, has a better defense than the Niners. And I think offensively, their offensive line is about what they struggled last year as well. I think these teams have some deficiencies at the same spot, especially when it comes to offensive line. So I think that you have to make them the second in the division.
Joe Lowen Dibs, the name of the show, 95.7 The Game. Joe has stepped aside for the rest of the morning. He'll be back tomorrow. Right now, 8:28 the time, and Greg Papa with us in just a couple of minutes. Low, they say that you can't win the division in the first 4 weeks, but you sure can lose it.
Yeah.
You take a look at what the 49ers open with. They go to Minnesota for the Vikings. That's no cakewalk right there, right?
Right.
You might get kicked around a little bit.
Yeah.
You come home for the Lions, who I think are an underappreciated team. They got a very good quarterback. By the way, who would you rather have, Matt Stafford or Jimmy Grapes?
Yeah, right now it's Stafford. Stafford's showing that he's more proven commodity in this league. But those first four games are tough. I see them beating Detroit, though. I think they can. That's a game they better win.
And Kansas City is a team right now that has a big question mark. You don't know what Patrick Mahomes is going to do. You don't know how it's going to respond as they start to change things up. But then you have to go down and play the Chargers down in L.A. Those are the first four games. If you come out 2-2, aren't you considering that a win?
I am. If this team comes out of that 2-2, I think that they're on the right track to get that eight and possibly nine, because Kansas City, you know, you look at Kansas City, I think their defense is still a good defense. I think if you talk about special teams, you got to give them the edge. Quarterback, I'd give the Niners the edge. But if you think defensively, I just really give Kansas City a big edge over the Niners. And so I think that's going to be tough sledding. So Detroit game, I feel real comfortable with. And, you know, L.A., unfortunately, the injuries of bug is starting to catch up with that team. So I know everyone is talking about L.A. as a Super Bowl coming.
Joe likes the Chargers.
Yeah.
Joe likes the Chargers a lot, although he hasn't done his final the computations?
Yeah, he has not, but you lost your starting safety, you lost your starting corner, you lost a lot. You know, this team has lost three starters on that team for the rest of the year.
So that's why I think the Niners can win that game. And I think 2-2 is very much on the table. And I've always thought that the LA Chargers are getting too much hype, a little bit overrated even before all these injuries hit. You know, the tight end, Hunter Henry, is gone as well.
Right.
So you've been decimated with injury, and this is a team that notoriously is a slow starter. They have rough Septembers, and I think that gives the 49ers an even bigger edge to come out and maybe surprise and win that one. And God forbid the Niners come out 3-1, the Jimmy G MVP hype.
Oh, absolutely.
If they come out and go 3-1,
oh my God,
it'll be crazy.
Crazy.
How many Garoppolo tats are we going to start seeing at Levi's?
I might get one.
That's what we're talking about. That's what I like. So those are your first four games. After that, you got Cardinals, Packers, Rams, Cardinals, the next set of four. The game at Green Bay on the road. That's also a Monday night game. If you go 2-2 in those, again, you're having a parade down there at Levi's Stadium. That's how good you're feeling about it, right, Lo? If you take a look at the next four, you've got yourself in a nice position halfway through the schedule.
Yeah, you do. Green Bay is going to be tough. You're playing Green Bay. So, and you know, in the Cardinals, that's a game, you know, you're looking at saying, hey, we got a chance there. So I think that they have an opportunity to make some hay.
All right, time for us to get to the Greg Papa Report. It's brought to you by Gelati Construction Company, celebrating over 100 years of teamwork, solutions, and excellence. And the great Greg Papa joining us here on Joe Lowen Dibs. Greg, it's Coe's here today. Joe's taking the rest of the morning off. We're starting with the 49ers, and I started this conversation based on the end of last year. Did the finish under Garoppolo get the 49ers ahead of themselves as far as their reconstruction curve? Is John Lynch ahead of himself, or is this team where they should be in year two with Shanahan and Lynch?
Oh, way ahead of themselves, because, you know, had you not made the trade to get Garoppolo on Halloween and you finished the year the way it was heading, in one win, two wins, three wins, whatever it was, and you wind up drafting a young quarterback, say you get Sam Darnold, who's a hell of a good player, by the way, then I think, you know, the way you piece together the offseason is completely different. Maybe you don't go out and buy the running back from Minnesota and sign Richard Sherman. So I think their thought process turned that that we can challenge for the NFC West. I heard you guys talking before I got on. This schedule to start the year is really hard. I mean, I think probably the most difficult season opener you can have when you got a brand new center, new right guard, rookie right tackle. Maybe it's an old right guard, but he hasn't played a whole lot. Joshua Garnett, just dealing with Mike Zimmer and his pressure package, the double A gap, constant blitzes. That's a really hard game. The Vikings could go to the Super Bowl this year. And then you got the Lions in week two at home. Then you go to Kansas City and the Chargers. Arizona, I think, is really solid. If they keep Sam Bradford healthy, I think they could win the NFC West, and I think they could easily finish second ahead of either the Rams or the 49ers. Then, you know, Seattle's going to be solid. So just go through it. Green Bay, you guys already did it. I mean, there really isn't a probably the easiest game on the schedule comes up when the Raiders come in on November the 1st, and who knows, you know, what John's going to do with that team. So, yes, you're way, way ahead of the curve in light of how it ended, and you got the franchise quarterback, and now you're trying to put the pieces around him.
Do you feel any better today than you did this time last week, Greg, because of the way Joshua Garnett played and maybe a solidification sensation of the offensive line?
Tim Roy's listening out there.
Unbelievable.
And he wants a little money. He wants some
very
money
nice.
For that.
I send him $2 every time I co-opt his great saying.
Yeah, he played well. I honestly am a little bit surprised. I didn't think he'd be able to figure it out. I did go to training camp early and watched him. The weight loss has definitely got him moving better. He's a powerful player. He played well. I'm not going to rule out Jonathan Cooper. I think, you know, I don't know what they're going to do with him. I guess you can't put him on the six-game pup list to start the year because he's not on right now in the preseason. That seems like an odd rule to me because guys do get hurt quite often. In fact, the volume of injuries are higher in the preseason than they are the regular season. But in any event, he's just not healthy. Cooper's a really good player. But, yeah, Garnett played well. The whole offensive line seemed to really figure out. And it wasn't the wide, wide outside stretch. It was more between the tackles. But Alfred Morris is a really good back. I saw one carry on Saturday and said, that's good. He's going to make the team. Now it's just a question of, you know, he could move up and be your number two behind McKinnon and get a lot of first and 10 carries. So answering your question, Dibbs, certainly Garnett played well. You got to get Cooper healthy, but you got Mike Person there. And Person may wind up starting the year until, you know, Garnett and Cooper are fully up to speed. But between the three of them, you're pretty good at right guard and backup center and the other guard position as well.
Pop, what do you do now? You know, you traded Harrell away, you know, and now you look at Watson, you look at also with Smith. We understand Reuben Foster, first two games out. We understand the guys like a heat-seeking missile can run sideline to sideline. That's great. But what can we expect from Smith? And since Harrell's going to be like, you know, Watson, so who's going to step up and look at the linebacking core? Who's going to be your guy?
You know, I just never figured out Eli Harrell at all. You know, I watched him and I thought, what does he do? He really doesn't do much at all. He does set a good edge in the run game, but you can get a lot of guys to do that.
Right.
And it wasn't like it was that outstanding, so I just never figured it out. So I'm glad that they wound up moving from him. The shocker is Fred Warner, Lowe. You know, wearing the green dot helmet as a rookie. Right. Guy never played middle linebacker in his life.
Right.
And they're going to throw him out there against the Minnesota Vikings. That's amazing. But he's the new breed. If he holds up well enough against the run, he obviously plays in your second and third down packages, your nickel and your dime, because he's so fast. And I think as long as they can keep him clean and let him run, he'll be able to play the run with his speed. The question is, will he be able to get off blocks? To answer your question, early in the year with Foster suspended for the first two games at the Vikings, home for the Lions, I think Warner's going to play and Malcolm Smith. I didn't see a lot of movement there the other day. He does concern me. I think without Foster, your three best linebackers, assuming Malcolm Smith is going to move a little better than he's shown, are Fred Warner, Malcolm Smith, and Brock Coyle. Now, but one of those guys has got to go play up on the line. I don't think any of them would be great enough to do it as far as strength. So probably it sounds like Coyle's just a really good player, but he may be one of those guys that can back up everywhere. So it's, you know, Warner and Malcolm Smith. And then when Foster gets in the mix, then I think Foster's strong enough to play on the, I call it on the ball, the strong side linebacker on the line of scrimmage versus the stack position, the two linebackers behind the line.
Sure.
I think Foster's, you know, strong enough to do that, but he's such a good fly around guy. But the future of the linebacking core, probably by as early as week three, or, you know, at some point this year, though, Lo, is going to be Fred Warner and Reuben Foster, without question.
All right, the great Greg Papa on the Greg Papa Report here on 95.7 The Game. You know, I want to get back into the division, the NFC West. On the outside looking in, you say, all right, the Rams are better than everyone else, and then it's a jumble for the rest of them. Is the West a little bit more even than we think it's going to be, Greg?
Well, if I said to you, the Rams have the worst quarterback in the division, what would you say?
Yeah, you know, we were debating that a second ago. Is he the worst quarter? Well,
yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
I mean, he's not bad.
He's not great, though.
Did McVay put him in positions to succeed?
A little bit of both. I think he got better. I want to see what strides he makes this year, but he's got to get better. But he's never going to be the athlete that you really need from this position, just the movement skill. You know, I saw him at Cal. He looked so thin and gangly, and he could throw the ball. There's no doubt he can spin it. He's a great thrower. But I just didn't see athleticism or size. The Rams made a monumental mistake by not taking Carson Wentz. And Jeff Fisher got fired. The GM keeps his job. If they had taken Carson Wentz, this would be a juggernaut you could not deal with. They would not have a weakness. But the quarterback, you can get him off his spot. The word is he's not accurate throwing to his right. Really? He's a right-handed quarterback. How does that work? So the Rams have loaded up, and they're going to have a really good defense once they get their best defender in, Aaron Donald, and I'm sure he'll play the opener. So they're good, but, you know, you got Russell Wilson laying there, and I know Seattle's changed everything they're doing, and now K.J. Wright's out. He may not play in the opener. Earl Thomas is still holding out. Chancellor's not there. Sherman's not there. But it's still Pete Carroll. They still got Bobby Wagner. They still got the quarterback, Russell Wilson. He's the only guy in the division that's won a Super Bowl. And I think Sam Bradford is an excellent, excellent player. I mean, you don't pay a guy $20 million a year because he's not capable. He's just got to stay healthy. And look at their team. I watched them the other night against Dallas. I've watched every one of their games. Arizona's really good. David Johnson. Who's better, David Johnson or Todd Gurley? David Johnson is a really, really good player. So, you know, it'd be hard for me to pick, cause one of these teams to be sub 500. That's how good I think they are. I see them, you know, all. You could win this division at 9-7 this year.
Wow.
Now, I get it because the out-of-division schedule is tough. We'll see how good the AFC West is because the NFC West plays the AFC West this year. And I think the Chargers are really good. If Denver gets good play from Keenum, that's a good team. This young back Freeman, Royce Freeman, and their defense is pretty strong. They, you know, they just did bring in Pac-Man Jones to try to give him a third corner. So in any event, I think the NFC West is really strong. I don't see a team that's going to drop down to four wins, clearly. I think they're all right around 500, and then we'll see if somebody can jump up, and you'll probably could easily win this division with 10 wins.
Greg Papa here on 95.7 The Game. Greg, looking at the 49ers defense, and you mentioned some of the linebacking issues with Reuben Foster missing the first couple games. Richard Sherman at the back end, how great can he be, and do you think that he's going to be able to be the kind of lockdown corner that can take away a side of the field and take away some of the pressure from Akello Witherspoon and some of the other younger players?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I watched him really closely on Saturday and watched it back, and he's just his movement. You know, what I wanted to see was his great change of direction. What he's so good is always staying on top of the wide receiver, never getting beat over the top, so he plays on top. And then change direction, plant on that right foot. And that's the one that he had the injury, the Achilles tear. And I didn't see him do it once. I saw him hopping around before the game, so it looked like he could move on that a little bit. But in the game, he never once really planted that right foot, transferred his way, change of direction. He played so far off. So I didn't see anything in the first game. The fact that he just got through the game and played, 32 defensive snaps, he didn't have to get subbed out, was step one in the process, and that's a significant step. But if you're in Minnesota and you're looking at him, you're thinking, he hasn't shown me he's Richard Sherman at all. I also saw him when he got caught moving inside against Ryan Grant, get completely turned around on the crossing route. The ball went the other side. Andrew threw it to his left and didn't even look that way, but he completely spun around and lost his balance. So If you move him and make him change direction, he may not be able to do it, and I suspect the Vikings will challenge him right away in the first game.
Pop, what do you expect from Armstead this year? I know a guy that, you know, has not reached his full potential. Is he capable? Does he have it, do you think, to be that boy dog that everyone's waiting for?
Boy, I mean, he is huge,
right?
And he is powerful. He looked like he was just going after a blocking sled on Saturday. He was just picking everybody up. And I think the key with him is keeping him fresh, Lo. You got to rotate these other guys, and whether it's Jones or Sheldon Day. I like Ronald Blair. I'm hearing he may get cut, but he looks like a try-hard guy. Those D linemen, you got to keep them fresh. So, obviously, he comes out in the sub package. But when he plays hard, and I think the mindset Saturday in Indy is we got to go hard. We haven't seen anything in this pass rush. Marsh, where are you? Itachi, where are you? Let's go. And they went hard. And when he plays hard, he is hard to block. And he will gobble up. He will push the pocket, collapse the whole thing. I think that, you know, why do they not play hard? And there are a lot of guys. And Dominican Sue had a lot of snaps where he did not play hard. And I think a lot of times teams and management, they think we're paying this guy so much money, he can never come off the field. But you've got to keep him fresh. And I think they're deep enough behind him, Low, to keep him fresh. And as long as he gives you the full motor, he is difficult to block.
Pop, thanks for the time. We always appreciate it. What do you got coming up at noon today?
Matty Vasgersian.
Oh, the best.
I love him.
Yes.
A's had a tough one yesterday.
And Santa Maria.
We're going full A's, I think. We're going to go Brode Brazil.
Nice.
Full Brazilian coming up.
Oh, the full Brazilian. I love it.
We're going to go Brazilian.
That's definitely going to be a good listen.
Bob,
this afternoon.
You got him fired up. You
I know. I'm all excited now.
He fell back in his chair. He's Brazilian.
Thank you, Gregory. We'll talk to you again
have
soon,
a good
buddy.
Day, boys.
There you have it. The great Greg Papa Report. It's brought to you by Gelati Construction Company, celebrating over 100 years of teamwork, solutions, and excellence. I like Vasgersian. You like Vasgersian?
He's good people. He's from Moraga, I believe. He's
big A's guy.
Yeah. Born and raised, A's fan, and I love his trademark, Santa Maria. I don't know if he throws it out anymore, like when it's a big moment. Holy Toledo, he goes Santa Maria. I'm a big fan.
I want him to somehow get ESPN to get the A's on a Sunday night game. At the Coliseum, no less. Because yeah. I think the place would go berserker.
The Coliseum would go berserker, ESPN
yeah.
would go berserker.
I think Coliseum would go berserker. Don't you think?
It depends on the opponent. I mean, if you...
Sunday Night Baseball.
Okay.
Sunday Night Baseball.
I'm familiar with the property.
Yeah, but you don't think that would be enough? You don't think that would be enough?
You'd have to look at who the matchup is, you know, and see...
Really?
Jim, how many Sunday games have they had this year?
But how many Sunday Night Baseball games have they had at the Coliseum?
Not many.
Right.
Not many.
You don't think Dave Cavill would get that ship rocking?
If he knew in advance and he could concoct right. one of his genius schemes to fill the place, absolutely. But if you're just saying target a game and throw it out there, the Texas Rangers and the Oakland A's on Sunday Night Baseball, no.
Doesn't work.
No. Now, if they're playing Houston, fine. Now
Yankees.
We're on to something. The Yankees, we're on to something. But you need a secondary draw in order to fill that thing up.
Anna, bring some sanity to this.
All right. So
discussion.
Sunday Night Baseball, here's what we have left. We have the Mariners. On September 2nd.
Bring it.
The Rangers on September 9th.
Ooh.
And the Twins on September 23rd.
Give me the game against Seattle to put them to bed with their playoff hopes. And that place is going to be rocking. Actually, I think if it's Sunday Night Baseball, I don't care who they're playing. I bet you Cavill gets the place rocking. So that's what I'm hoping they do with Vasgersian today.
Because
he's a big A's guy. Get him. He's got some pull over at ESPN, doesn't he?
I hope it, you're right. But I'm kind of with dibs on this one. I just think it depends on who they're playing. If you're talking about... those other teams you're saying, if it's not the Yankees or the Astros, right. I don't think it's a rocket.
Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 the game. Joe is taking the rest of the morning off because he worked hard for the first 2 hours.
Well,
he said, the
nice.
Heck with it. I did 4 hour show in 2 hours. I'm
He's
stepping
gone.
Aside. So I'm filling in until the rest of the show. So I want to ask you guys a philosophical question about sports. What's the greatest, like let's say the NFL, what's the greatest team prize you could hope for in the National Football League?
Super Bowl, right?
It's to win the Super Bowl.
Right, absolutely.
Then individually, what's the best personal individual honor in that league you could possibly hope for?
Well, of course.
Go to the Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, no question.
Go to the Hall of Fame would be it.
Sure.
What if you had a choice to make and it was I could win a Super Bowl or I could be a Hall of Famer? Because there's an owner in the National Football League who has posed that question. He's got both of them. All right. Jerry Jones, Cowboys. Hall of Fame worthy? The way he changed the game and sports marketing, and he has built a 100,000-seat stadium. And
absolutely. It's awesome what he's done. Jerry Jones has been a pillar in the National Football League. You can say what you want. Jerry Jones is...
You can hate him?
You can hate him, but he's done a hell of a job marketing. He's done the things he needs to do to earn that respect to be a Hall of Famer.
And he's part of that elite club.
Yeah.
But he's also won Super Bowls.
Yes, this is
true. And that's as big as you can get, right? As an owner, you win the Super Bowl, that's great. And then you get an individual honor, you go into the Hall of Fame. Right. He was posed the question, would you rather... How about this? Jerry Jones says he wouldn't trade his spot in the Hall of Fame for another Super Bowl ring. You play the game. And right now, you're without your Hall of Fame ring or jacket. You'll probably get it one day. We all hope you'll get it one day. You don't have a Super Bowl ring. When you hear an owner say, you know, he wouldn't trade his Hall of Fame spot for another Super Bowl ring, how do you think? How do you compute that?
I think that the Super Bowl's bigger, and I think it's not even close, because the thing about it, if you're doing your job and you're a player in the league and you are a player that, you know, had it some burn, Hall of Fame is unbelievable. But you played a game, you want to get paid, but you want to win a Super Bowl. And if you're an owner to say, man, I want a title, I want a Super Bowl, that goes a long ways. Hall of Fame, I get it. It's a self-preservation. It's a self-rewarding. When you can say you're a Super Bowl team, it's only one of those. There's a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame, but only one year there's a Super Bowl champ. So I think that for me personally, without a doubt, to win a Super Bowl would be bigger than the Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
Dibs, you want to jump on that?
I would rather be a Hall of Famer. I mean, obviously, I never had the chance to win a Super Bowl or be in the Hall of Fame, but I'd rather be a Hall of Famer because, for example, Lo Neal, his career, 16 years, he was only able to impact the game to the extent that his position allowed, or in his case, as a special teamer, he made one of the great plays in special teams history. He was a part of one of the greatest plays
Frank
in special
Wycheck
teams
made
history.
One of the great plays in...
Well,
in,
without Lo Neal making that catch, none of that ever happens. And without Frank making that great throw, none of that ever happens. But to my point, Jim, if you'd allow me to continue unfettered without your constant interruptions and your Caltrans shirt...
You digest.
I would say that I had
Sorry,
a 16-year career.
God.
16-year career. He could only control... That he can control. He couldn't help that one of his teammates came up 1 yard short in the Super Bowl, denying him a chance to win the Super Bowl. It was a great game. It was a great play, but the play ultimately wasn't made that would have given them a Super Bowl. So for Lowe, he looks back on his career and says, 16 years of dominance, of greatness, that's something you can hang your hat on. And being a part of a winning team, that isn't something you can always control. So I'd rather have the one that I can control, which is my career.
And don't they say when it comes to the Hall of Fame, if they can't write the history of the league without you, you know what I mean? That's one of the criterion. When they write the history of the league, are you part of that history? Which I can understand. That's a pretty big honor as a Hall of Fame.
I think that anytime you talk about Hall of Fame guys, even though you still talk about guys that they played with. So I get that. And it depends on what your sphere of influence on the game was. If you're a guy that didn't necessarily play at all, or you didn't have an integral part, then you might say, oh my God, I wish that I could be in the Hall of Fame because you're a guy that just didn't even play or you didn't. But if you're a guy that really was loved the game and you were still a part of the game and had a lot of play time and you were into a part of it, you want to say you won a Super Bowl. So I think it's mixed feelings, mixed emotions on that. I think that some people would depends because there's a lot of guys that maybe MVP of a Super Bowl or had that great game. Those moments, they're like, man, I wouldn't trade that experience for a Hall of Fame to say because I played the game. But the Hall of Fame, it does validate a lot of guys. And I understand a lot of guys don't win a Super Bowl that are Hall of Fame. And then they say, God, at least I got that Hall of Fame to show that how great I really was.
How much trickier does it get, Dibs, if you look at Jerry Jones and you say, well, he's already won Super Bowl. So he's not saying, you know, he's won it. So he has that taste. He's saying, I wouldn't give up the Hall of Fame for another Super Bowl. Is that change the equation at all?
No, it makes perfect sense because you already have
three. You got yours.
Yeah, you got yours, and even though you would get another one, it would cost you. You okay over there? It would cost you that gold jacket and that Hall of Fame status. Now, if it was, would you give up your Hall of Fame status to get one Super Bowl ring? That's a different question.
If you're a Cowboy fan and your owner says, you know what, I wouldn't give up my Hall of Fame for another Super Bowl ring, how do you feel if you're a fan?
You probably don't feel good.
No, you don't,
but
right?
If you're a fan of that team and you have this as your owner, you aren't surprised because Jerry Jones is the de facto head coach and the GM and the owner of the team. So if you're a Cowboy fan, you know full well that it's all Jerry all the time.
95795, what's the bigger deal, the Hall of Fame or the Super Bowl? What would you rather have? If you're a fan, you probably want your Super Bowl. You're more excited for a Super Bowl win than you would be if your favorite player became a Hall of Famer.
The difference is the Hall of Fame, there is no action. Meaning that there is, you know, when you think about a game, you're in a game, you have playoffs, and then the Super Bowl. So the process itself is an experience with itself. Now, the Hall of Fame, I was able to experience and induct an LT and be a part of it. Oh, my God, emotionally and just the overwhelming joy because he got in. I could imagine what it feel like because I was able to experience behind the scene and say, oh, my God, emotion for that individually, it's totally different experience than experience something like a Super Bowl. The Super Bowl, it's the preparation, it's the things that you do leading up to that. You're still affecting it. You're affecting the game. You're part of the game. And the playoffs, every week, you're like, my God, I'm one game step, one game closer. You don't dream, when you're a kid, you don't say, my God, I can't wait to go to the Hall of Fame. Oh, I can't wait to play in the National Football League because I want to be a Hall of Fame. That's not, you don't think like that. You think of, man, I want to be a good player. I want to win a Super Bowl. And the Hall of Fame is extra. That is something that, by you working and by people appreciating the things you do, by attrition, you get into the Hall of Fame. Super Bowl is a different animal. It's a different feel. You're with guys. You're experiencing wins. You're traveling. And it's a different experience. So one is an individual. The other is just a team. And it's just, I think the playoffs, the whole experience is totally different.
Text line is pretty interesting. The 209 says, when Shaq and Jordan throw their rings in Barkley's fat face, championships are bigger, right?
Yeah.
They're all in the Hall of Fame. But the guys who carry the ring,
it's different.
Patrick Ewing was a great NBA player, Hall of Famer, changed the game at one point when he was playing. I don't remember him getting a ring, right? Patrick Ewing sitting on the outside looking in. So would a championship, that's kind of the ultimate, right? Or is it the Hall of Fame? You know, another one off the text line just pointed out, said it was simply, that sums up Jerry Jones perfectly. All about Jerry and his ego and his money. Team is just a vehicle for him to get some shine. Is that fair? Is that the way you look at Jerry Jones?
Yeah, I think he sees it as the ultimate asset. What are they, the most valuable pro sports property in the world? And you've got your own state-of-the-art 100,000-seat stadium. It'd be nice to win, I think, but you wouldn't sacrifice any of what you already have in order to get another Super Bowl. Now, if they said, you got to take $100 million off your net worth, you got to take $100 million and give it away, and you get another Super Bowl, then what does he do at that point? I mean, $100 million, it's no small peanuts to a guy even who has $2 or $3 billion. But still, would you cough up $100 million to get a Super Bowl ring? Probably not.
Might make you more money, though.
And what got him, what made Jerry Jones a Hall of Famer? It's the Super Bowls. It's a lot of those things. And what
that's
he
a
did,
part of the equation.
It's a part of it. Yeah. There's a lot of things that factor in to make you know, who you are. So I think it's tough. I think that both of those are awesome, you know, accolades to get. But I think one is more an individual and the other one's about a team. And it's about the process and the experience, you know, just the lead up to the Super Bowl. It's so amazing that ride with your teammates, with your coaches, and you're the only show. It's totally different experience, you know, from a Super Bowl to a Hall of Fame.
So let me localize this a little bit. Ready? You chew on this. If you're John Lynch, right, and there's discussion that he could have been a Hall of Fame type player. Fair enough?
Oh, he is.
All right.
And John Lynch will get in the Hall of Fame.
Would you rather win a Super Bowl as a general manager of the 49ers or go in as a Hall of Famer as a player? If you're John Lynch, what do you think that decision is? That's a tough one.
We got to ask Johnny.
That's a tough one. It's almost, that question you almost have to ask him if you see him at a cocktail party.
Yeah, and the caveat would be if you won a Super Bowl as a GM, that wouldn't help you then subsequently get
Correct.
Into the Hall of Fame.
Correct.
This would be a door is closed for you sort of argument, hypothetical, which normally we don't tackle hypotheticals on this show.
We don't?
Or why not? Only when Ray Ratto's in do we not tackle them.
I think that we should only do when Ray's here.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're right.
Hypothetical radio.
Ray might call
That's what
in,
we
guys.
Make it.
Hypothetically, that's a good idea, but in actual practice, it usually doesn't work out.
But this is an interesting discussion. Like, if you're Lynch, because you have to be proud of what you did on the field, just to have your name discussed as a potential Hall of Famer. Come on, that's an elite crew. But you're onto a different part of your life right now. He's moved on from the playing side. He was a broadcaster, and now he's got his sights set on changing the way the game is looked at because he became a general manager in an unconventional way, right? He didn't start as a scout, or he didn't start as a coach. He was a player, was an elite broadcaster, probably worked with some teams on things, but then he jumped into the general manager's
room. I think great players like John Lynch have rather won a Super Bowl than go to the Hall of Fame. Now, great players, if they don't win a Super Bowl, then they say, my God, my next step, I wish I can get, hopefully get in the Hall of Fame, because you can no longer play a game. When you can no longer play the game, and if you've been a great player, one of the NFL's great, then you say, man, at least my work, the money, all that stuff is great. But man, if I can be rewarded to say, God, I respect him, he's a Hall of Famer, that guy, then you're like looking at players, that's, I think, how they feel. But while they're in the process, if you're a great player and you're in the process and you're still playing, I think you'd rather win a Super Bowl than go to the Hall of Fame while you're playing. And then after you're done playing, you're like, man, that you ask that question now, it's like, oh my God, I want to be in the Hall of Fame. And I think John Lynch, he's going to get in the Hall of Fame. And he would love to be in the Hall of Fame. But if you ask him why he was playing, what's more important to him? I know John Lynch, and I believe that John Lynch would say winning the Super Bowl.
I often wonder for guys who have done both. They're Hall of Famers who have won championships, no matter what the sport. When it's time for them to start reviewing their life, what do they focus on? Do they think of the moments that it took to win a championship, or do they sit back? Do they picture themselves at the podium with the gold jacket on? Do they picture themselves at the Hall of Fame banquet when Jordan's crying and he's giving his speech?
What do you talk about more? Think about when Jerry comes on the line. Jerry talks about God, him and Joe, the football game. He don't talk necessarily about the Hall of Fame.
All right, fair enough. 8:58 the time. Joe Lo and Dibs. Joe is out for the rest of the morning. He's back tomorrow. I'm Jim Cosimore in for Joe. When we continue, a lot more coming up on the NFL. Also, we've got some great stuff with Cam Inman coming on, the 49ers reporter from the Mercury News, plus the voice of summer, Ken Korak at 9:30. We get you rolling for A's baseball later today. They're down in Houston. All that coming up. Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.